For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Moving from drama to empowerment. So moving from the dreaded drama triangle into the empowerment dynamic is today's topic. We explored the dreaded drama triangle last time, and I'll give a brief refresher of each of the roles as we talk today. But that perpetuates really unhealthy patterns of interaction, and it prevents us from addressing our issues in a constructive manner. So we want to break free of that dynamic, but we have to recognize or become mindful that we're slipping into those roles and take certain actions so that we can change out of those roles and respond in a more healthy, skillful way. Because when we do that, then we can foster more functional and more empowering relationships. Marcus Felstad says, all of these roles require one person to be superior, right, good, and better than the other person, while the other person has to be inferior, wrong, bad, and worse. This one-up, one-down game has to be stopped in order for you to stop having a drama-filled relationship. So when we talked about the victim is lesser than the rescuer who has to sweep in and rescue because the rescuer is trying to make himself feel like he's more. And the persecutor has to blame and put other people down so he or she feels like they're more. And so the dreaded drama triangle with the victim, the rescuer, and the persecutor keep us kind of stuck where we are, and we can't get out, we can't move it. And so David Emerald developed a model called the empowerment dynamic, and that's the positive alternative to the dreaded drama triangle. It really focuses on transforming the roles into more empowering and constructive roles. And so most of the content of what I'm talking about comes from David Emerald and Donna Zajanek, because I've been reading their blog posts for years and, gathering information from them. So there's not a lot of direct quotes, but it is most of their work. So let's start with the victim. The victim feels like the world's out to get them, that they're helpless and they're not able to change their situation, that they have to put up with whatever texturing they're receiving, whether they want to or not, whether they have to fall back into the same role they had as a child when they're at family events. They feel like they can't do anything. And often, because of that, they kind of feel shame, which paralyzes them. And what we want to do is move from the victim role into more of a creator role. The creator takes responsibility for their life, and they actively work towards solutions. The victim is so focused on problems, they're not working towards solutions. They just want to vent again and again about how terrible things are, and life is so hard, and people are so bad to them. The creator views these issues as challenges and opportunities for growth. So rather than saying, my sister did it to me again, or my husband did this to me again, and it's all their fault, and I'm the victim, I can't do anything, the creator role says, oh, I'm dealing with a difficult person. Here's an opportunity for me to practice and to grow and to take steps to achieve the goals I want to achieve. So the mindset is really, rather than feeling powerless, the creators recognize their own agency and their ability to make choices. Victims can't make choices. They can't make decisions. But creators focus on what they can do to improve the situation. What do I have control over? Victims focus on what they don't have control over. And the Serenity Prayer tells us we hopefully will know the difference. and control what we can and let go of what we can't. So to move from victim to creator, you have to start with self-awareness. If you're running on autopilot, someone does something to press your button, you automatically jump on that hamster wheel of reactivity and you go, go, go. Whereas if you're self-aware, you become aware, ooh, I'm slipping into that victim role. And for me, it's a feeling in my body. My body's tensing up and it says, pay attention, something's happening here. And then I can start to look at what's really happening. Am I believing some old story that's not 100% true? Am I believing I'm not good enough? Am I believing that I'm powerless? You know, why am I believing that? And so with self-awareness, I can see what's happening. I can take it from below the line in that circle we always talk about, anything below the line we're not aware of, and I can put it above the line so that I can have control over it. But a victim is jerked around by all that stuff they push below the line, and they don't even know it's happening, so they can't do anything about it. And once you can see it, you can take personal responsibility for it. You can accept that, okay, I screwed up and I'm in this pickle. And what am I going to do to get myself out? Rather than saying, oh boy, the world is out to get me. And now that here this happened again, I'm doing it over and over and over again. So I can take responsibility and I can problem solve if I take responsibility. If I'm not taking responsibility, it's not my job to problem solve. It's somebody else's problem. And moving to the creator requires us to be in the present moment. How many live a lot of your life in the past, ruminating about the past? And how many of us spend a lot of your life rehearsing the future? Both hands up for me. If we're not in the present moment, we can't influence our future. And so we really can focus on what's going on if we stop, take our pause, and bring ourselves back to the present moment. That's why I start almost every one of our meditations, our opening meditations, with feel your feet on the ground. Because when I need to come back to the present moment, I just feel my feet on the ground, and it helps bring me back. Oh yeah, I'm here right now. I'm not off there because that hasn't happened yet. It's the future. The other thing that I found is necessary is self-compassion. If we're so busy beating ourselves up over the mistake we made, we can't fix the mistake. So we need to take a moment to say, yeah, I screwed up, and that really hurts, or it sucks, or it's really upsetting to me. Maybe put a hand on our heart to calm our sympathetic nervous system, and then we can move to problem solving. But if we're so busy beating ourselves up over the mistakes and how this always happens to me, we can't become a creator. We're going to just stay in that victim role. So you'll know your creator essence is emerging when you wake up to what you care about. When you have your intentions and you write them down and you look at them and you pay attention to them, they make a difference in your day and how your day's going to go. When you take responsibility for your own actions, yeah, I screwed up. I did something wrong, but you know what? I can begin again and again and again. So once you take responsibility for your actions, you can begin again. You don't have to wait for next week or next year for a New Year's resolution. You can just begin again with the next breath. And you start to kind of make friends with yourself. We can't be creative when we're all tense and tight and looking for the other shoe to drop. But if we relax a little bit, become friends with ourselves, we can be creative. Why do you think people have such great ideas in the shower? Because that's where they're relaxed. You can be creative. You're shifting from the I can't to what can I do? So that's the victim to the creator. Now let's look at the rescuer and how the rescuer can really become more of a coach. And a rescuer is, if you recall from last week, that's my go-to. I have to rescue everyone. And I'll tell you, at the retreat I was at this weekend, when my mind was wandering, they were encouraging, just note where it goes. It went to all these scenarios about how I'm going to help this person and how I'm going to do that for that person and how I'm going to rescue. And it was just like, oh, I thought I was beyond that. So I get cocky about my practice too. But it happens. So the rescuers gain satisfaction by identifying with your caretaking role. And a lot of us were raised to be in a caretaking role and know that, you know, that's good when you do that. People like it. And they're proud of being helpers and fixers. You know, many, many years, I was a do-it-all. Whether you wanted me to do it for you or not, I did it. Because I thought that was my role and that's what I was supposed to do. But actually, the rescuer is not really helping out the victim. The rescuer is keeping the victim down, because as long as they keep the victim down, they get to be the rescuer. And it feels good to take care of things and fix things for people. So what we want to do is, it's not like we don't want to help people, but we want to help them in a different way. And that's the way of the coach. And I'm not talking about a coach like Moose, who was my freshman year in high school swim team coach that quit swim team because he was such a jerk. That's not the kind of coach I'm talking about. I'm talking about the kind of coach who really supports and encourages you, who lets you know that I'm not taking over your problem and I'm not giving you solutions, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to help you see what your problem is so you can figure out the solution yourself. And I'm going to be there to support you, and I'm going to cheerlead you along the way. So they help individuals find their own answers and develop their own skills. Rather than, they want the person to become more independent and more self-reliant rather than become reliant on them. So anyone who's had kids grow up and move on, it's a really hard thing to do, is to stop taking care of them and let them be on their own and make their own mistakes. And we also do it with our friends. We want to rescue them because they're doing something we don't think they should be doing. And rather than letting them figure their own way out, we step in with our answers. And it doesn't make our friends feel very good. It makes them feel like, yeah, I am powerless and I am helpless and I don't know what I'm doing and I need this person. When they really don't. So the mindset of coaches, again, is to empower others by asking insightful questions and providing guidance rather than doing things specifically for them. They respect the other person's ability to solve their own problem. And it might not be solved in a good way, and the other person might fail. But we have to let them do that, because that's how they're going to learn. And if we just do it for them, they're not going to learn at all. So to move from the rescuer to the coach, you have to start by setting boundaries. I tell you, when I was at work, I did so many other people's jobs without them asking me to do it, because I didn't set boundaries. And they weren't appreciative because I was doing something that they could do, that was theirs to do. So why am I sticking my nose in their job? So you have to become aware of your boundaries and what the boundaries are. What is it I should be doing and what is it they should be doing? And where is that line? Doesn't have to be in cement, but at least it needs to be in the sand. So I can now start to see where when I'm taking on too much or when I'm enabling people. And it's a habit that's really hard to break because you feel so good when you fix something for someone. But if I can see that, it's above the line. I can do something about it. If I don't see it, I'm on that hamster wheel of fixing it, whether they want me to or not. And I have to look at my intentions. Intentions are so important. And every single one of our intentions is marbled. We don't have any pure intentions. So my intention is I want to help, but that's marbled with, I want to feel good about myself because I rescued you, because I helped you, because I fixed this. All of our intentions are marbled. And when we know that, we can look, what is my true motivation for doing this? Am I doing this really out of the goodness of my heart? Or am I doing this to make myself feel good, to make myself feel superior? If we want to be a good coach, we have to learn how to listen. Typically, as a rescuer, what I would do is I would listen enough until I knew what the solution was, or what I thought the solution was. It wasn't necessarily, and sometimes my solution wasn't even to the problem they had, it was to the problem I thought they had. So we have to really learn to listen and really be present with others before we jump into it. So rather than listening to fix or listening to give advice, we have to listen to understand and really let them talk it through, because sometimes just letting them talk it through, they solve their own problem. And if we just jump in with our solution, we haven't let them solve their own problem. We also have to work on our judgment. You know, I would, especially at work, oh, this person doesn't do a very good job. I'll just do this because I do it better and this is what's needed. And was very judgmental. But if we want to be a coach, we want to use wise discernment to give them constructive criticism, but we don't want to judge them, because judging them is putting them down. And that quote I read at the beginning is, you can't be superior, right, good, and better without the other person being inferior, wrong, bad, and worse. We're not looking for that. As a coach, we're looking as we're equals. I have some skills maybe you don't have. I have some insights maybe you don't have. But I'm not better than you. I'm the same as you. And together we can figure this out. So when you're a coach, you're encouraging others to find their own solutions. You're not enabling them. You don't feel the need to rescue people to prove that you're worthy. Boy, that's a hard one for me.
Say again.
You don't feel the need to rescue people to prove that you're worthy. If I'm taking care of everybody, then I'm worthy. And if I'm letting them take care of themselves, then what's my self-worth? I have to answer that. You ask open-ended questions that are intended to help the individual find their own answers and make their own informed choices. And sometimes our open-ended questions are so biased that we're really trying to guide them toward what we think they should do. So that's another skill that you have to work with. And the way to work with that is really by listening to understand instead of listening to give advice. So the third role was the persecutor. And the persecutor's insecurity wants them to be in control. They criticize and blame other people, because the more they do that, the better they feel. It's like, if I put you down, I feel better. It's kind of what the bully does on the playground. I have to put you down so I can feel good about myself, or so people will think I'm tough and I'm whatever. The challenger is different. They challenge you to be the best you can be. You don't challenge a baby to learn how to walk by making fun of them when they fall down or hitting them when they fall down. You challenge a baby to walk by encouraging them. You know, you put something that they want a couple feet away so they can take a step and get it. That's what a challenger does, is it encourages people and it holds people accountable. Sometimes we feel uncomfortable holding family, friends accountable. But I found if you ask, do you want me to hold you accountable for that? It's still uncomfortable, but I can do it. And that helps them. It doesn't make me the boss of them, and it's not like they're reporting to me. But it's just knowing that someone cares about you doing it and celebrating when you do what you wanted to be doing. And commiserating when you weren't able to do it. And maybe going back to being a coach again to say, but you can, you know, you didn't do it this time, but you can do it. You can begin again. So the challenger challenges others to grow. And they do that by offering honest yet empathetic input. And empathetic is the key word. It doesn't do any good to say, oh, you're such a jerk, you really screwed that up. That's maybe honest input, but it's not empathetic. It's like, okay, you didn't do that exactly right. Here's what you did right. Here's maybe what you can improve on. And making sure that you're saying it at a time when the person can hear it, not when they're beating themselves up. We don't need to beat people up when they're already beating themselves up. Trust me, I've had that happen many times in my life, and it doesn't help. So the mindset of the challenger is to focus on being supportive instead of critical. They encourage people to stretch beyond their comfort zone, because if we're not constantly hitting the edge of our comfort zone, we're not growing, and our comfort zones will shrink and shrink and shrink. And as I age, I see a lot of people I know whose comfort zone is shrinking and shrinking, and their world is shrinking and shrinking. So I think it's especially important for us at this age to really challenge ourselves and challenge others to keep growing and to expand our comfort zones and work toward our potential without blaming people, without trying to control everything. So to move from the persecutor to the challenger, you have to have some empathy. You have to realize, wow, this person's going through a really hard time. I don't need to beat them up. They're already beating themselves up. But if you don't see that, you're going to correct them. You know, I can't think of how many times my kids did something wrong, and I know they were beating themselves up, but I beat them up too, because I wanted to get the point across. You know, this was not good. So if we're empathetic in realizing they're having a hard time, it's not, why did you do that, you idiot? It's what happened that caused you to do something that you wouldn't normally do, or to do something that wasn't very skillful. See the difference? It's not, why did you do that? It's what happened. Because hurt people. Happy people don't hurt people. So when someone does something unskillful, it's usually because they're hurting themselves in some way. Also, you need some self-regulation. If you don't want to be a persecutor, you've got to know what triggers turn on that persecutor role in you. Because there's a button that people press, and all of a sudden you're in the persecutor role and on that hamster wheel of persecuting, and you can't get off. So you have to be aware of your triggers and your emotional responses. And then you need to learn how to give constructive feedback. You know, I don't think I was ever taught in school how to give constructive feedback. In the workplace, I took some workshops on it. But we're not taught how to give constructive feedback. How to really, you know, there's that sandwich thing where you say something nice and then you tell them what they did wrong and then you say something nice. But that doesn't work for everybody. And a lot of times the message gets lost. So we have to learn, how can we give feedback in a thoughtful and respectful manner? And for some, and we have to vary it based on the person. Some people you do need to hit over the head with a baseball bat before they hear it. And other people, if you even whisper it, it's devastating to them. So you need to learn for each person, how can I give them the feedback that they need in a way that they can listen to it. So if you're a challenger, you're going to focus on how to support the other's growth rather than focusing on tearing them down. You're going to encourage rather than blame. And you're going to hold others accountable in a respectful manner and in a manner that they can accept. So those are the three roles of the dreaded drama triangle. And as I was looking at them and looking at how do you move from the dreaded drama triangle to the empowerment dynamic, what I saw was that 90% of these skills are mindfulness skills. That if we can stop and slow down and become aware, we can start regulating our emotions, which mindfulness helps with, so that we don't jump on that hamster wheel of reactivity and get going and going. And with mindfulness, we can stop, turn off the flashlight that said this person did something bad, and turn on the floodlight to see the whole big picture of what's really going on, so that we don't have to blame them, but we can help them. With mindfulness, we can look at our perspective. At the retreat this weekend, and I'm not exactly sure the quote, but Thich Nhat Hanh said, all of our perceptions are delusions. In other words, our perceptions are often wrong. We look at something and we make it goes through our filters, and whatever it is comes out something different than is truly reality. So we need to know that with mindfulness, we can take a step back, turn off our flashlight, turn on our floodlight, and see what's really happening, and ask the very important question, are you sure? Because a lot of times we see something, we make an automatic impression of what happened, and it's that impression is incorrect. So if we ask, are you sure? Then we can correct our perceptions and look at it from a different perspective. And really what this is all about is breaking our patterns. When things are below the line, we can't break the pattern. We just jump on that hamster wheel and go. But if we're mindful and we can bring things up to our awareness, we can look at them and decide we have choices. We can decide what we want to do. You know, I can decide, do I want to be judgmental or do I want to bite my tongue on this one? I can decide, do I want to jump in and fix it or do I want to step back and let the person try and handle it themselves and see what they can do? So if we can break the patterns that we've been doing over and over, and we've talked before with Judson Brewer's research on habits, on how the reward value in your brain is what makes the strength of a habit. The stronger you think you're rewarded for something, the more you're going to do it, and the harder it is to break that habit. And the only way to break the pattern is to see that that reward is just a figment of your imagination. It's not real. And so when you break out of your patterns, when you observe your patterns with mindfulness, you see what works and what doesn't work. And then you can break the patterns of what doesn't work and quit doing it. You know, it's attributed to Albert Einstein and many other people that insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Well, I'd say every one of us in this room is probably insane, according to that definition, because we do that over and over. But if we can see our patterns, we can break those patterns. And then we can really get into problem solving, which is what we want to do. And by doing this, by making the change from being the drama triangle to being more empowered, you get more resilient. It really takes a lot of energy to be a rescuer. You don't have time to do anything but do. You don't have time to develop relationships. You don't have time to just relax because you've got so many things you have to do. And if you don't do them all, then you're no good. And that's a real energy hog. And when that is the case, it's hard to be resilient. Just like you can't drive your car without gas. If you let all of your energy inside of you run down, you don't have the energy to be creative, to help coach, to challenge people in a good way. So you can't be resilient and you don't bounce back as quick. And so you want to focus again on what you have control over and what you don't have control over. And when you don't have control, how can I grow from this difficulty? How can I take this difficult thing that's happening that I can't change, and instead of saying I'm a victim, say, how can I live with it? Because I can't fight reality. Reality's going to win. But I have to figure out, how can I live with it? What can I do to make things as good as they can be? Not to make things the way I want them to be, because that might not be possible. But how can I take reality and work around it so that I can be as happy as I can be? So what happens is you end up transforming your interactions. You end up transforming how you approach challenges in a more constructive, in a more positive manner. But it takes a lot of slowing down and a lot of practice to do it over and over and over. And you're going to slip back out of the habit or into the old habit. And then you're going to see that. And then you're going to begin again. And that's why we call it mindfulness of practice, because we have to keep doing it for the rest of our lives.